listening to the Key of Awesome Music podcast, brought to you by me, Jim Gavin. Key of Awesome Music was established back in 2011 as a way to further protect and promote the music that I wrote as a solo artist, as well as some of the other bands that I was in the past. And that has since grown into representing 10 artists' music that have either gone under the radar or have not been noticed for one reason or another and are just awesome, awesome musicians and storytellers through song. In the late winter and early spring of 2018, Key of Awesome Music was given the opportunity to further expand its horizons as well as further impact people in a positive way using music as a tool to do so. From one-on-one sessions on guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, percussion, and vocals, to group sessions at developmental and physically disabled day programs, to interactive live performances at nursing homes and assisted living facilities, we are fortunate and blessed to be able to provide a mission-based music service for people in a time of need. Right now, we are reaching out to drug and alcohol counseling centers, prisons, at-risk youth, homeless shelters, soup kitchens, mental health organizations, and anywhere else we can think of where coming in to do a music program would best serve and support the individuals that you serve and support. If this sounds like something you are interested in, please feel free to reach out to us at jim.gavin@gmail.com. That is jim.gaven@gmail.com. Also, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/keyofawesomemusic. That's facebook.com/keyofawesomemusic. We also have a Patreon page set up so that we can go into some of these places and not affect their bottom line. If you are looking to donate to a worthy cause or something a little different outside of the box and you're having trouble doing so, this would be a great opportunity to give back to the community and using music as a means to help people. Feel free to go to www.patreon.com/JimGavin. That's patreon.com/JimGaven. Thank you for all of the love and support. Trust me, it is greatly appreciated. From the bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is Jim Gavin from the Key of Awesome Music, improving the quality of life through music.
To find out there's nothing all right now to ease your mind. Sit back, relax, there is no rush, no need to speed things up. All we have is time. Don't think about the future, forget about the past. Time to figure out a way to make this moment my heart, you'll see, will slowly come in. future, forget about the past. Time to figure out a way to make this moment last. To make this moment last. To make this moment last. Sunsets, I won't let you forget that I need you. Spring comes and spring goes, forever you will know that I love you. Sunrises, sunsets, I won't let you forget that I need you. Spring comes and spring goes, forever you will know that I love you.
Hey guys, this is Jim Gavin again from the Key of Awesome Music podcast. Today's little episode is going to be about fans and what they mean to us as musicians. So I chose this just because I've been doing a lot of reading and listening to different podcasts and trying to figure out what the best course of action is to get people to continually want to stream and or buy your material. When you're doing anything in the arts, it's definitely difficult to get people and capture people on a continual basis. Sometimes they might like one thing that you do, and then they'll buy that one thing, and then they just kind of disappear and never buy anything from you again. And then you get those people who really invest in what you are doing and are in it for the long haul, so to speak. So the idea with today's session is, would you want to have 1 million wishy-washy fans or 1,000 die-hard fans? Just give my little two cents on it here and get you to think about what you would rather have. So I'd rather have the 1,000 diehard fans because they're more likely to buy anything you put out than the 1 million wishy-washy fans. And I wouldn't want to have just 15 minutes of fame, which usually happens to artists who have one really big song, tour for a year or two, and then fall to the wayside. This happens more than anyone wants to admit, really. But I'd rather have a lifetime of mutual respect and great relationships. Now here's a few reasons why. One, you don't have to worry about being incognito in public since you won't be super famous by having a million people really know who you are. This is great for continuing to lead a modest, humble life, but still reaping the financial benefits as well as respect from 1,000 people. Two, you have people who will buy every product you release, CDs, merchandise like t-shirts, stickers, anything you want to think of like that, concert tickets, DVDs, or books. And three, there is more of an artist-fan relationship and maybe even a few actual friendships since there will be more time to cultivate relationships on a smaller scale than on a larger scale. This works in any sort of industry, though. I mean, think about a small nonprofit that maybe has 5 to 10 employees. You're going to be a lot closer to them than if you had this big multinational corporation or international superstar program that's got 50,000 employees and you barely know anybody. I know it is way more enticing to be wildly famous and have everybody know who you are, but there are plenty of drawbacks to that idea too. For instance, not being able to go out for an ice cream without the paparazzi hounding you, or not being able to go out to eat with your family because everyone in the restaurant wants your autograph. In order to enjoy peace and quiet or solitude, you'd have to almost stay off the grid and go to a scheduled cabin in the woods somewhere in North Dakota.
I'd rather not have that kind of problem. Life's too short to always be worried about your appearance or wondering if people know who you are. It ruins the idea and the reality of being fully immersed in the moment. The fact is, you can't if you are thinking about all these other things. 311 is a band like this and fits it to the T. Yes, they have more than 1,000 fans. I'm not trying to be exact with that number. It's just the matter of having not an incredibly crazy amount of fans so that you can't do anything outside of music because people are just going to hound you all day long. But they're not at the point of Lady Gaga stardom, like what I just said. I think they're better off for it. I've been to a bunch of their shows, some festivals. I've traveled long distances with one of my really good friends who is obsessed with this band, to say the least. We've driven to Memphis from Jersey. We've flown out to Vegas for a short stint of shows. And then we actually drove down to the swamplands of Florida and Live Oak. And we've also seen a handful of shows at least together in the Philadelphia, New York City sort of area. So they have crazy diehard fans that will buy anything and everything they put out. Heck, they even have their own day where they do a show every other year somewhere special, March 11th, hence the 311. The idea is to have a manageable number of fans where you can actually interact with them on a more personal level rather than being a number in a system, for lack of a better way to say it. For instance, their newest album they put out in the summer of 2017 it's called Mosaic, and the front cover has very, very tiny pictures of all of their fans. They did a contest, basically an open-ended thing, where you could send in a picture of yourself and they would make it part of the album and the album cover, which is really cool. And the album cover itself ends up looking like all the guys in the band, but it's all these little pictures put together. It must have taken a heck of a long time to assemble and organize, but that's something really cool, and not every other band would think of doing something like that. But that just goes to show you how they really want their fans to be involved. And what a better way than putting them on an album. So you think about it for yourself. This could, again, go with any sort of industry, whether you're in the arts, entertainment world or whatnot. I'd rather have a core group of really great employees if I'm managing a business than like a bunch of employees. And some of them are good, some of them aren't, some of them are really invested into what we're doing, some of them are just kind of going through the motions. I'd rather have 1,000 people or a small number of people who are really gung-ho for it, put all their time, energy, and effort into it, and really believe in the mission. So you think about it for yourself, see what you would rather have as a musician, or anybody owning a business, or anybody just doing anything in life. Would you rather have 5 million people, let's say, know who you are, but you're kind of just like a 15 minutes of fame sort of person and then never hear from you again, or 1,000 to a very small number in the grand scheme of things, of people who will buy and invest in every single thing that you put out or that you release? I think I'd rather the latter. That's it for today, guys. Coming at you live, Jim Gavin from Key of Awesome Music Podcast. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Slowly turn, something needs to change. I have felt it's better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all. All I wanted was to find the perfect love, the one where we both fall. So sweep me off my feet. I feel it in every single step you take to me. To
All our lives we've been wandering around, living blind, never found our way. In the night all the stars aligned for us, the pieces fell in place. Call it luck, call it grace, or call it fate, all at once everything had changed. Parallel but not side by side, for life I thank God every day that you swept me off my feet. I feel it in every single breath you steal from me. Fly away to a higher place, where no one else can love you like I do. It's a new home for two.
Hey guys, this is Jim Gavin from the Key of Awesome Music podcast coming at you today to talk about song structures, the pop formula, if you will, and my thoughts on that, as well as kind of diving a little bit deeper into every part of a song in popular music. So we'll start off with my thoughts on the standard verse, which is something building into the chorus in anticipation. The chorus, which is usually super catchy. The verse, the chorus, the bridge. And the bridge is usually something a little different, which veers from the rest of the song for a short change, which is also known as a coda. And then the chorus. So we have verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. That's pretty much the standard pop formula for songs. Okay. Just because the standard formula for mainstream songs is the aforementioned blurb, doesn't mean it has to be followed to the T. Bob Dylan doesn't follow this formula at all. He has 7 to 8 verses in some of his songs with a quick one-line refrain rather than a separate chorus all on its own. We know that the standard pop song formula is verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, like I said before. And sometimes it's even simpler than that. Sometimes it's just verse, chorus, plain and simple. However, there can be several variations of this formula, and no one says you have to follow it at all if you don't want to. That's the beauty about music. You could do your own thing, and it doesn't have to be the same regurgitated sounds and melodies of everyone else out there. I love when people think and act outside the box when it comes to creating a song. To me, that's where the real genius lies. Will it sell once finished? Maybe, maybe not. But you're taking the same chance on writing the way everyone else does by following the pop formula, so to speak. There's no guarantee that the song will sell or become famous on either path. So why not be original and come up with a structure entirely on your own? Say something like, chorus, 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 or chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, bridge, outro. Just some ideas. For me, writing a song is very much like putting a puzzle together, like I talked about in previous podcasts. A musical puzzle, that is. Each part has to fit just perfectly in order for the entire thing to sound and flow right. There are many ways to accomplish the same thing here. Make it original, make it memorable, make it unforgettable, make it you. Which leads me to talk about different parts of songs now. Like I mentioned it in the intro of this little podcast, but I wanted to get a little bit deeper into every single part and really get even deeper than you would normally think or even want to go into as far as what a bridge is or a technical name for it, which is called a coda. So essentially the coda is a fancy name for the bridge of a song. Usually it takes the song on a short tangent and plays something a little different than the rest of it, both musically and vocally. Phil Lesh of the Grateful Dead once spoke of the coda in an interview, and I was really fascinated with what it meant or how it fits its way into music. This is at a time when I wasn't really playing music at all or performing it or learning it. I was just heard a interview he did, and it seemed really cool, so I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into it once I finally got into being interested in music. At the time, I had no idea what he was talking about, but soon learned it was essentially the bridge. There are so many songs that come to mind when thinking of awesome bridges, or codas, if you will, but two that stick out to me are the bridges from Goo Goo Dolls songs, Iris and Name. Neither song have lyrics in the bridge, but rather inspirational musical sections that lift off into another stratosphere. I'm a sucker for strings, so any song that has strings in them, and I'm all ears, literally and figuratively. And they deliver one of the best string arrangements in a pop song I've ever heard in Iris. After listening to and thinking about the decision to not have lyrics or vocals in these bridges, it's a genius move. Words would only take away from the power the music is presenting in those moments. And it's one of the few times in pop music where the listener won't care that there aren't any. Before I became a musician, I always wanted to hear lyrics in a song, but the more I've studied music in its various styles, shapes, and forms, and learned what goes where, like putting a puzzle together, a musical puzzle, where every song has its own little pieces to connect to make the best possible version of the song when complete. It's more about placing the right instruments and vocals, lyrics in the right spots rather than just muddying up a mix or making a wall of sound rather than a beautiful masterpiece. At any rate, here is what Merriam-Webster and Wikipedia had to say about the coda, respectively. Merriam-Webster's definition. An ending part of a piece of music or work of literature or drama that is separate from the earlier parts. Something that ends and completes something else. Wikipedia has to say, a more or less independent passage at the end of a composition introduced to bring it to a satisfactory close. Concluding passage in a musical composition. Technically, it is an expanded cadence. It may be as simple as a few measures or as complex as an entire section. So, pretty neat. Like any good story or book, the prologue or foreword is a great way to grab people's attention before the bulk of the material is presented. The same goes on for an intro of a song. This could be a particular lead guitar part or a riff that is played alongside a drum and bass section. It could be something sung a cappella before the rest of the band comes in. Whatever it ends up being, its purpose is to set the song up and build some anticipation for the verse. And now we're getting into the meat and potatoes of different parts of songs. So, the verse is a section that comes after the intro, before the pre-chorus or chorus, and then comes back around again after the chorus to post-chorus before the cycle continues one more time around. This is generally what happens in music you hear on the radio, but like anything else, variations of the song progression are out there to examine. The verse is the part of the song which begins to tell the story of the song, lyrically and musically. Usually it's quite barren, maybe drums, bass, acoustic, electric guitar, musically, so as to differentiate itself from the other parts of the song. Towards the end of the verse, you might feel a sense of anticipation leading to the pre-chorus, which brings me to the next section, the pre-chorus. It's usually a short section that comes after the verse and before the chorus or refrain. This builds even more anticipation leading to the chorus, and it sometimes uses a different melodic rhythm or pattern for music and vocals. The first song that comes to mind is Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud, which uses a different musical progression than the verse and the chorus and builds a slight anticipation leading into the chorus where the vocals really soar. There are several songs which use the pre-chorus as a way to build anticipation and make the listener eager to hear what's going to come next. The Foo Fighters' Everlong does the same thing with a sweet electric guitar octave climb-up during the pre-chorus before the chorus comes in to rock your face off. The chorus is pretty self-explanatory. That is the part of the song that's usually the catchiest, vocal-wise, lyric-wise, and it's something that's going to get stuck in your head. That's really what the writer or composer is focusing his or her best efforts on is making a really solid chorus for you to remember. Of course, other parts of the song are just as important, but the chorus is the thing that's usually going to get stuck in your head. The post-chorus is similar to the intro of a song as it reminds the listener of how the song started sometimes, as well as transitions the listener from chorus to second verse. This could be instrumental only or a section with vocals in addition to instruments. More often than not, the post-chorus ends up being the intro of the song played after the chorus. Take Litt's My Own Worst Enemy, with that signature guitar riff starting the song off. It returns again after every chorus and even closes out the song. Now we come to a solo. The solo can come whenever the songwriter or artist decides to come in, but is usually after the second chorus, replacing the bridge or coda, or coming right after the bridge or coda. In most cases, this is an instrumental-only section. Maybe light backing vocals like oohs and ahs are present, but put way back in the mix. And last but not least, we have the outro. It's very similar to the intro or post-chorus in that it closes out the final thoughts of the song and usually brings in sections and even the entire intro or post-chorus parts. Sometimes it's a musical fade-out. Sometimes it's an abrupt end after something familiar is already performed. You get the point. Without this song structure, music, especially popular music as we know it, would just sound like chaos with no catchy elements to it. This is why music you hear on the radio does so well as far as spins and sales go. They have repetitive, catchy melodies both vocally and musically, as well as tells a heartfelt story that most people can relate to in one way or another, most of the time. I use variations of the structure when writing songs and usually allow the song to dictate what it wants for itself rather than the alternative. That's how great songs are written, letting the song tell you what it wants rather than you telling the song what you want to put where. Signing off from the Key of Awesome Music podcast today on song structures and my thoughts on them, this is Jim Gavin. Have a great day, guys. Bye-bye.